Star Wars, The Last Command, by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 7, side 1. Leia looked up. Beings of all sorts were beginning to pour into the gallery. Government civilians, most of them, who were authorized this deep into the command floor, but weren't cleared for access to the war room proper. Sitting alone to one side, gazing intently at the master displays, was Bell Iblis. "Get him down here," Leia told Sena. "We need him." Sena seemed to sigh. "He won't come down," she said. "Not unless and until Mon Mothma asks him to. His own words." Leia felt her stomach tighten. Bell Iblis had more than his share of stiff-necked pride, but this was no time for personal squabbles. "He can't do that. We need his help." Sena shook her head minutely. "I've tried. He won't listen to me." Leia took a deep breath. "Maybe he'll listen to me." "I hope so." Sena gestured toward the display, where one of Bell Iblis's dreadnoughts had appeared from the space dock to join the rising wave of starfighters, Corellian gunships, and escort frigates blazing toward the invaders. "That's the Harrier," she identified it. "My sons Peter and David are aboard it." Leia touched her shoulder. "Don't worry, I'll get him down here." The center section of the gallery was becoming almost crowded by the time she reached it. But the area around Bell Iblis was still reasonably empty. "Hello, Leia," he said as she came up to him. "I thought you'd be down below." "I should be, and so should you," Leia said. "We need you down..." "You have your comlink with you," he cut her off sharply. She frowned at him. "Yes." "Get it out, now. Call Drayson and warn him about those two interdictors." Leia looked at the master tactical. The two interdictor cruisers that had come in late to the party were doing some fine-tuned maneuvering, their hazy gravity wave cones sweeping across one of the battle stations. "Thrawn pulled this stunt on us at Quat Kristak," Bell Iblis went on. "He uses an interdictor cruiser to define a hyperspace edge, then brings a ship in along an intersecting vector to drop out at a precisely chosen point. Drayson needs to pull some ships up on those flanks to be ready for whatever Thrawn's bringing in." Leia was already digging in her robe pocket. "But we don't have anything here that can take on another Star Destroyer." "It's not a matter of taking it on," Bell Iblis told her. "Whatever's on its way will come in blind, with deflectors down and no targeting references. If our ships are in place, we'll get one solid free shot at them. That could make a lot of difference." "I understand," Leia said, thumbing on her comlink and keying for the central switching operator. "This is Counselor Leia Organa Solo. I have an urgent message for Admiral Drayson." "Admiral Drayson is occupied and cannot be disturbed," the electronic voice said. "This is a direct council override," Leia ordered. "Put me through to Drayson." "Voice analysis confirmed," the operator said. "Council override is superseded by military emergency procedure. You may leave Admiral Drayson a message." Leia ground her teeth, throwing a quick glance at the tactical. "Then put me through to Drayson's chief aide." "Lieutenant Dupre is occupied and cannot..." "Cancel," Leia cut it off. "Get me General Raiken." "General Raiken is occupied." "Too late," Bell Iblis said quietly. Leia looked up. Two Victory-class Star Destroyers had suddenly appeared out of hyperspace, dropping in at point-blank range to their target battle stations, exactly as Bell Iblis had predicted. They delivered massive broadsides, then angled away before the station or its defending gunships could respond with more than token return fire. On the tactical, the hazy blue shell indicating the station's deflector shield flickered wildly before settling down again. Drayson's no match for him, Bel Ibla sighed. He just isn't. Leia took a deep breath. You have to come down, Garm. He shook his head. I can't. Not until Mon Mothma asks me to. You're behaving like a child, Leia snapped, abandoning any attempt to be diplomatic about this. You can't let people die out there just because of personal pique. He looked at her, and as she glared back, she was struck by the pain in his eyes. You don't understand, Leia, he said. This has nothing to do with me. It has to do with Mon Mothma. After all these years, I finally understand why she does things the way she does. I've always assumed she was gathering more and more power to herself, simply because she was in love with power. But I was wrong. So why does she do it? Leia demanded, not really interested in talking about Mon Mothma. Because with everything she does, there are lives hanging in the balance, he said quietly. And she's terrified of trusting anyone else with those lives. Leia stared at him. But even as she opened her mouth to deny it, all the pieces of her life these past few years fell suddenly into place. All the diplomatic missions Mon Mothma had insisted she go on, no matter what the personal cost in lost Jedi training and strained family life. All the trust she'd invested in Ackbar and a few others. All the responsibility that had been shifted onto fewer and fewer shoulders. Onto the shoulders of those few she could trust to do the job right. That's why I can't simply go down and take command, Bel Ibla said into the silence. Until she's able to accept me, really accept me as someone she can trust, she won't ever be able to give me any genuine authority in the New Republic. She'll always need to be hovering around in the background somewhere, watching over my shoulder to make sure I don't make any mistakes. She hasn't got the time for that. I haven't got the patience. And the friction would be devastating for everyone caught in the middle. He nodded toward the war room. When she's ready to trust me, I'll be ready to serve. Until then, it's better for everyone involved if I stay out of it. Except for those dying out there, Leia reminded him tightly. Let me call her, Garm. Maybe I can persuade her to offer you command. Bel Iblis shook his head. If you have to persuade her, Leia, it doesn't count. She has to decide this for herself. Perhaps she has, Mon Mothma's voice came from behind them. Leia turned in surprise. With all her attention concentrated on Bel Iblis, she hadn't even noticed the older woman's approach. Mon Mothma, she said, feeling the guilty awkwardness of having been caught talking about someone behind her back. It's all right, Leia, Mon Mothma said. General Bel Iblis? Bel Iblis had risen to his feet to face her. Yes? Mon Mothma seemed to brace herself. We've had more than our share of differences over the years, General, but that was a long time ago. We were a good team once. There's no reason why we can't be one again. She hesitated again, and with a sudden flash of insight, Leia saw how incredibly difficult this was for her. How humiliating it was to face a man who'd once turned his back on her, and to admit aloud that she needed his help. If Bel Iblis was unwilling to bend until she'd said the words he wanted to hear. And then, to Leia's surprise, Bel Iblis straightened to a military attention. Mon Mothma, he said formally, given the current emergency, I hereby request your permission to take command of Coruscant's defense. The lines around Mon Mothma's eyes smoothed noticeably, a quiet relief coloring over her sense. I would be very grateful if you would do so, Garm. He smiled. Then let's get to it. Together, they headed for the stairway down to the command floor. And with a newly humbled sense of her own limitations, Leia realized that probably half of what she'd just witnessed had passed her by completely. The long and perilous history Mon Mothma and Bel Iblis had shared had created an empathy between them, a bond and understanding far deeper than Leia's Jedi insights could even begin to track through. Perhaps, she decided, it was that empathy that formed the true underlying strength of the New Republic, the strength that would create the future of the galaxy. If it could withstand the next few hours. Clenching her teeth, she hurried after them. A pair of Corellian gunships shot past the Chimera, sending a volley of turbolaser fire spattering across the bridge deflector shield. A squadron of TIE fighters was right on their tail, sweeping into a Relis flanking maneuver as they tried for a clear shot. Beyond them, Pelion spotted an escort frigate cutting into backup position across the gunship's exit vector. Squadron A-4, move to Sector 22, Pelion ordered. So far, as near as he could tell, the battle seemed to be going well. There they go, Thrawn commented from beside him. Pelion scanned the area. Where? He asked. They're preparing to pull back, Thrawn told him, pointing to one of the two rebel dreadnoughts that had joined the battle. Observe how that dreadnought is moving into cover position for a retreat. There, the second one is following suit. Pelion frowned at the maneuvering dreadnoughts. He still didn't see it, but he'd never yet seen Thrawn wrong on such a call. They're abandoning the battle stations. Thrawn snorted gently. They never should have brought those ships out to defend them in the first place. Golan defense platforms can take considerably more punishment than their former ground commander apparently realized. Their former ground commander? Yes, Thrawn said. At a guess, I'd say our old Corellian adversary has just been put in command of Coruscant's defense. I wonder what took them so long. Pelion shrugged, studying the battle area. The Grand Admiral was right. The defenders were starting to pull back. Perhaps they had to wake him up. Perhaps. Thrawn sent a leisurely look around the battle area. You see how the Corellian offers us a choice. Stay here and duel with the battle stations, or follow the defenders down into range of the ground-based weaponry. Fortunately, his eyes glittered, we have a third option. Pelion nodded. He'd been wondering when Thrawn would unveil his brilliant new siege weapon. Yes, sir, he said. Shall I order the tractor launching? We'll wait for the Corellian to pull his ships back a bit further, Thrawn said. We wouldn't want him to miss this. Understood, Pelion said. Stepping back to his command chair, he sat down and confirmed that the asteroids and the hangar bay tractor beams were ready, and waited for the Grand Admiral's order. All right, Bel Iblis said. Harrier, begin pulling back. Cover those escort frigates on your portside flank. Red Leader, watch out for those TIE interceptors. Leia watched the tactical display, holding her breath. Yes, it was going to work. Unwilling to risk the ground-based weaponry, the Imperials were letting the defenders retreat back toward Coruscant. That left only the two battle stations still in danger, and they were proving themselves more capable of absorbing damage than Leia had realized they could. And even that would be ending soon. The Grand Admiral would know better than to be here when the Sector fleet arrived. It was almost over, and they'd gotten through it. General Bel Iblis, an officer at one of the monitor stations spoke up. We're getting a funny reading from the Chimera's hangar bay. What is it? Bel Iblis asked, stepping over to the console. It reads like the launching tractor beams being activated, the officer said, indicating one of the multicolored spots on the Star Destroyer silhouette centered in his display. But it's pulling far too much power. Could they be launching a whole TIE squadron together? Leia suggested. I don't think so, the officer said. That's the other thing. Near as we can tell, nothing at all left the bay. Beside Leia, Bel Iblis stiffened. Calculate the exit vector, he ordered. All ships, sensor focus along that path for drive emissions. I think the Chimera's just launched a cloaked ship. Someone nearby swore feelingly. Leia looked up at the master visual display, her throat suddenly tight as the memory of that brief conversation she and Han had had with Admiral Ackbar flashed back to mind. Ackbar had been solidly convinced, and had convinced her, that the double-blind properties of the cloaking shield made it too user-dangerous to be an effective weapon. If Thrawn had found a way around that problem... They're firing again, the sensor officer reported, and again. Same from the Death's Head, another officer put in. Firing again. Signal the battle stations to track and fire along those vectors, Bel Iblis ordered, as close to the Star Destroyers as possible. We've got to find out what Thrawn's up to. The word was barely out of his mouth when there was a flash of light from the visual display. One of the escort frigates along the first projected vector was suddenly ablaze, its aft section trailing fiery drive gases as the whole ship spun wildly about its transverse axis. Collision, someone barked. Escort frigate Evinrue, impact with unknown object. Impact, Bel Iblis echoed. Not a turbo laser shot. Telemetry indicates physical impact, the other shook his head. Leia looked back at the visual, where the Evinrue was now wreathed in burning gas as it fought to get its spin under control. Cloaking shields are supposed to be double-blind, Leia said. How are they maneuvering? Maybe they're not, Bel Iblis said, his voice dark with suspicion. Tactical, give me a new track from point of impact with the Evinrue. Assume inert object. Calculate impact velocity by distance to the Chimera, and don't forget to factor in the local gravitational field. Feed probable location to the Harrier. Order it to open fire as soon as it has the coordinates. Yes, sir, one of the lieutenants spoke up. Feeding to the Harrier now. On second thought, delay that last, Bel Iblis said, holding up a hand. Order the Harrier to use its ion cannon only. Repeat. Ion cannon only, no turbo lasers. Leia frowned at him. You're trying to take the ship intact? I'm trying to take it intact, yes, Bel Iblis said slowly. But I don't think it's a ship. He fell silent. On the visual, the Harrier's ion cannon began to fire. The dreadnought opened fire, as indeed Thrawn had predicted it would. But only, Pelion noted with some surprise, with its ion cannon. Admiral? Yes, I see, Thrawn said. Interesting. I was right, Captain. Our old Corellian adversary is indeed in command below. But he's allowed us to lead him by the nose only so far. Pelion nodded as understanding suddenly came. He's trying to knock out the asteroid's cloaking shield. Hoping to take it intact. Thrawn touched his control board. Forward turbo laser batteries. Track and target asteroid number one. Fire on my command only. Pelion looked down at his magnified visual display. The dreadnought had found its target. its ion beams vanishing in mid-space as they flooded down into the cloaking shield. It shouldn't be able to take much more of that. Abruptly, the stars in that empty region vanished. For a couple of heartbeats, there was complete blackness as the cloaking shield collapsed in on itself. Then, just as abruptly, the newly uncloaked asteroid was visible. The ion beams cut off. "Turbolasers, stand by," Thrawn said. "We want them to have a good look first." "Turbolasers, fire." Pelion shifted his attention to the viewport. The green fire lanced out, disappearing into the distance as they converged on their target. A second later, there was a faint flash from that direction, a flash that was repeated more strongly from his visual display. Another salvo, another, and another. "Cease fire," Thrawn said with clear satisfaction. "They're welcome to whatever's left. Hangar bay, firing status." "We're up to 72, sir," the engineering officer reported, his voice sounding a little strained. "But the power feedback shunt's starting to glow white. We can't keep up these dry firings much longer without burning out either the shunt or the tractor projector itself." "Close down dry firing," Thrawn ordered, "and signal the other ships to do likewise. How many total firings have there been, Captain?" Pelion checked the figures. 287, he told the Grand Admiral. "I presume all 22 actual asteroids are out."
"Yes, sir," Pelion confirmed. "Most of them in the first 2 minutes, though there's no way of knowing if they've taken up their prescribed orbits."
"The specific orbits are irrelevant," Thrawn assured him. "All that matters is that the asteroids are somewhere in the space around Coruscant." Pelion smiled. "Yes, they were. Except that there were only a fraction of the number the rebels thought were there."
"And now we leave, sir?"
"Now we leave," Thrawn confirmed. "For the moment, at least, Coruscant is effectively out of the war." Grayson nodded to the battle ops colonel and stepped back to the small group waiting for him a short distance behind the consoles. "The final numbers are in," he said, his voice sounding a little hollow. "They can't be absolutely certain they didn't miss any through the battle debris, but even so, their count is 287. 287, General Raikan repeated, his jaw dropping slightly. "That's the number," Grayson nodded, turning his glare on Bel Iblis. As if, Leia thought, all this was somehow Bel Iblis's fault. "What now?" Bel Iblis was rubbing his cheek thoughtfully. "For starters, I don't think the situation is quite as bad as it looks," he said. "From everything I've heard about how expensive cloaking shields are, I can't see Thrawn squandering the kind of resources 300 of them would take, especially when a much smaller number would do the job just as well." "You think the other tractor beam firings were faked?" Leia asked. "They couldn't have been," Raikan objected. "I was watching the sensor board. Those projectors were definitely drawing power." Bel Iblis looked at Drayson. "You know more about Star Destroyers than the rest of us, Admiral. Is it possible?" Drayson frowned off into the distance, professional pride momentarily eclipsing his personal animosity toward Bel Iblis. "It could be done," he agreed at last. "You could run a feedback shunt from the tractor beam projector, either to a flash capacitor or a power dissipator somewhere else on the ship. That would let you run a sizable surge of power through the projector without it really doing anything." "Is there any way to tell the difference between that and an actual asteroid launch?" Mon Mothma asked. "From this distance?" Grayson shook his head. "No." "It almost doesn't matter how many are up there," Raikan said. "Eventually their orbits will decay, and letting even one hit ground would be a disaster.
Until we've cleared them out, we can't risk lowering the planetary shield. The problem being how we locate them, Grayson agreed heavily, and how we know when we've gotten them all. A movement caught Leia's eye, and she looked over as a tight-faced Colonel Bremen joined them. Again, it could be worse, Bell Iblis pointed out. The sector fleet can have the out-orbit relay station replaced in a few hours, so at least we'll still be able to direct the New Republic's defense from here. It'll also make it easier to transmit an all-worlds alert, Bremen spoke up. Mara Jade's escaped. Mon Mothma inhaled sharply. How? She asked. With help, Bremen said grimly. The guard droid was deactivated, some kind of jury-rigged restraining bolt. It erased that section of memory, too. How long ago? Raikan asked. Not more than a few hours. Bremen glanced around the war room. We've had extra security on the command floor since the break was discovered, thinking they might have been planning some sabotage to coincide with the Imperial's attack. That could still be the plan, Bell Iblis said. Have you sealed off the palace? Like a smuggler's profit box, Bremen said. I doubt they're still here, though. We'll need to make certain of that, Mon Mothma said. I want you to organize a complete search of the palace, Colonel. Bremen nodded. Right away. Leia braced herself. They weren't going to be happy about this. Don't bother, Colonel, she said, touching Bremen's arm to stop him as he turned to leave. Mara's not here. They all looked at her. How do you know? Bell Iblis asked. Because she left Coruscant earlier tonight, along with Han and Luke. There was a long silence. I wondered why Solo didn't come to the war room with you, Bell Iblis said. You want to tell us what's going on? Leia hesitated. But surely none of these people could possibly have anything to do with the Delta Source security leak. Mara thinks she knows where the Empire's cloning facility might be. We thought it would be worth sending her and a small team to check it out. We thought, Grayson snapped. Who is this we? Leia looked him straight in the eye. My family and closest friends, she said. The only people I can be absolutely certain aren't leaking information to the Empire. That is a gross insult. Enough, Admiral, Mon Mothma cut him off calmly. Calmly, but there was a hardness around her eyes. Whatever reprimands may be due here can wait until later. Whether it was prudent or otherwise, the fact remains that they are on their way, and we need to decide how best to help them. Leia? The most important thing to do is to pretend Mara's still here, Leia said, the tightness in her chest easing slightly. She told me she'd only been to Wayland once, and she couldn't guess how long it would take her to reconstruct the route. The longer lead they have, the less time the Empire will have to rush reinforcements there. What happens then? Mon Mothma asked, assuming they find it. They'll try to destroy it. There was a moment of silence. By themselves, Grayson said. Unless you have a spare fleet to lend them, yes, Leia said. Mon Mothma shook her head. You shouldn't have done it, Leia, she said. Not without consulting the Council. If I'd brought it to the Council, Mara might be dead now, Leia said bluntly. If news leaked to the Empire that she could find Wayland, the next commando team they sent wouldn't stop at just trying to discredit her. The Council is above suspicion, Mon Mothma said, her voice turning chilly. Are all the Council members aides? Leia countered. Or the tactical people and supply officers and library researchers? If I'd suggested an attack on Wayland to the Council, all of those people would eventually have known about it. And more, Bel Iblis nodded. She has a point, Mon Mothma. I'm not interested in laying blame, Garm, Mon Mothma said quietly, nor in defending anyone's little niche of power. I'm concerned about the possibility that all this was indeed a setup, Leia, and that it will cost your husband and brother their lives. Leia swallowed hard. We thought about that, too, she said, but we decided it was worth the risk, and there was no one else to do it. For a long minute, no one said anything. Then Mon Mothma stirred. You'll need to talk to everyone who knows Mara Jade is gone, Colonel, she said to Bremen. If and when we obtain Wayland's location, we'll see what we can do about sending reinforcements to help them. Provided we can be sure it isn't a trap, Drayson added, glowering. Of course, Mon Mothma agreed, avoiding Leia's eyes. For now, that's all we can do. Let's concentrate on Coruscant's immediate problems. Defense and finding those cloaked asteroids. General Bel Iblis. A tentative hand touched Leia's shoulder, and she turned to find the slicer Gint standing there. It's all over, he muttered to her. The battle is, yes, she said, glancing at Mon Mothma and the others. They were already knee-deep into a discussion about the asteroids, but eventually one of them was bound to notice Gint and realize he wasn't supposed to be here. Come on, she told him, steering him back toward the war room exit. I'll tell you all about it outside. What did you think of Imperial battle encrypt codes? Oh, they're okay, he said. The guys in there didn't let me do all that much, really. I didn't know their machines as well as they did. They had kind of a silly drill going, too. Leia smiled. The best and smoothest decrypting routine the New Republic's experts had come up with, and Gint considered it a silly drill. People get into routines on the way they do things, she said diplomatically. Maybe I can arrange for you to talk to the person in overall charge and offer some suggestions. Gint waved a vague hand. Nah, military types wouldn't like the way I do things. Even Carter gets bent out by it sometimes. By the way, you know that pulse transmitter you've got going somewhere nearby? The one Delta Source has been using? Leia nodded. Counterintelligence has been trying to locate it since it started transmitting. But it's some sort of cross-frequency, split-phase something or other, and they haven't had any luck. Oh, Gint seemed to digest that. Well, that's a tech problem. I don't know anything about those. That's all right, Leia assured him. I'm sure you'll find other ways to help. Yeah, he said, digging a data card from his pocket. Anyway, here. She frowned as she took the card. What's this? It's the encrypt code from the pulse transmitter. Leia stopped short. It's what? He stopped too, turning innocent eyes on her. The encrypt code, that cross-frequency, what's it is using? I finally got it sliced. She stared at him. Just like that? You just went ahead and sliced it? He shrugged again. Well, sort of. I've been working on it for a month, you know. Leia gazed at the data card in her hand, a strange and not entirely pleasant thrill of excitement tingling through her. Does anyone know you have this? She asked quietly. He shook his head. I thought about giving it to that colonel in there before I left, but he was busy talking to someone. Delta Source's encrypt code. And Delta Source didn't know they had it. Don't tell anyone else, she said. And I mean anyone. Gint frowned but shrugged. Okay, whatever you say. Thank you, Leia murmured, sliding the data card into her robe pocket. It was the key to Delta Source. Deep within her, she knew that. All she needed was to find the right way to use it, and to find it fast. Chapter 15. The fortress of Hjarne had been crumbling slowly away for perhaps 1,000 years before the 5th Alderanian expedition had spotted it, keeping its silent, deserted vigil over its silent, deserted world. A vast expanse of incredibly hard black stone, it stood on a high bluff overlooking a plain that still bore the deep scars of massive destruction. To some, the enigmatic fortress was a tragic monument, a last-ditch attempt at defense by a desperate world under siege. To others, it was the brooding and malicious cause of both that siege and the devastation that had followed. To Cardiff, for the moment at least, it was home.
"You sure know how to pick 'em, Carda," Gillespie commented, propping his feet up on the edge of the auxiliary comm desk and looking around. "How did you find this place, anyway?"
"It's all right there in the old records," Carda told him, watching his display as the decrypt program ran its course.
A star map appeared, accompanied by a very short text. Gillespie nodded toward Carda's display.
"Klingon's report?"
"Yes," Carda said, pulling out the data card. "Such as it is."
"Nothing, right?"
"Pretty much. No indications of clone traffic anywhere on Poderus, Chazwa, or Joyol."
Gillespie dropped his feet off the table and stood up.
"Well, that's that then," he said, stepping over to the fruit rack someone had laid out on a side table and picking himself out a dribless fruit. "Looks like whatever the Empire had going in Oris sector has dried up, if there was anything going there in the first place."
"Given the lack of a trail, I suspect the latter," Carda agreed, choosing one of the cards that had come from his contact on Bespin and sliding it into the display. "Still, it was something we needed to know, one way or the other. Among other things, it frees us up to concentrate on other possibilities."
"Yeah," Gillespie said reluctantly as he went back to his seat. "Well, you know, Carda, this whole thing has been kind of strange. Smugglers, I mean, doing this kind of snoop work. Hasn't paid very much either."
"I've already told you we'll be getting some reimbursement from the New Republic."
"Except that we don't have anything to sell them," Gillespie pointed out. "Never known anyone yet who paid for no delivery."
Carda frowned over at him. Gillespie had produced a wicked-looking knife from somewhere and was carefully carving a slice from the dribbless fruit.
"This isn't about getting paid," he reminded the other. "It's about surviving against the Empire."
"Maybe for you it is," Gillespie said, studying the slice of fruit a moment before taking a bite. "You've got enough sidelines going that you can afford to lay off business for a while. But, see, the rest of us have payrolls to meet and ships to keep fueled. The money stops coming in, our employees start getting nasty."
"So you and the others want money?"
He could see Gillespie brace himself.
"I want money. The others want out."
It was not, in retrospect, exactly an unexpected development. The white-hot anger toward the Empire that had been sparked by that attack at the Whistler's Whirlpool was cooling, and the habits of day-to-day business were beginning to reassert themselves.
"The Empire is still dangerous," he said.
"Not to us," Gillespie said bluntly. "There hasn't been a single blip of Imperial attention directed toward us since the Whirlpool. They didn't mind us poking around Oris Sector. They didn't even come down on Mazik for that thing at the Bilbringi shipyards."
"So they're ignoring us, despite provocation to do otherwise. Does that make you feel safe?"
Carefully, Gillespie sliced himself off another piece of fruit.
"I don't know," he conceded. "Half the time I think Brask's right, that if we leave the Empire alone, it'll leave us alone. But I can't help thinking about that army of clones Thrawn chased me off Ukiyo with. I start thinking that maybe he's just too busy with the New Republic to bother with us right now.
Carda shook his head.
Thrawn's never too busy to chase someone down if he wants them, he said. If he's ignoring us, it's because he knows that's the best way to quiet any opposition. Next step will probably be to offer us transport contracts and pretend that we're all good friends again.
Gillespie looked at him sharply.
You've been talking to Parta?
No. Why?
She told me 2 days ago that she's been offered a contract to bring a bunch of sublight engines to the Imperial shipyards at Ord Tracy.
Carda grimaced. Has she accepted?
Said she was still working out the details. But you know Parta. She's always running right on the edge. Probably can't afford to say no.
Carda turned back to his display, the sour taste of defeat in his mouth.
I suppose I can't really blame her, he said. What about the others?
Gillespie shrugged uncomfortably.
Like I said, the money keeps going out. We have to have money coming in, too.
And just like that, the reluctant coalition he'd tried to put together was falling apart. And the Empire hadn't had to fire a single shot to do it.
Then I suppose I'll just have to go it alone, he said, standing up. Thank you for your assistance. I'm sure you'll want to be getting back to business.
Now, don't get all huffy, Carda, Gillespie chided him, taking one last bite of fruit and getting to his feet. You're right. This clone stuff is serious business. If you want to hire my ships and people for your hunt, we'll be happy to help you out. We just can't afford to do it for free anymore, that's all. Just let us know.
He turned toward the door.
Just a minute, Carda called after him. A rather audacious thought had just occurred to him.
Suppose I find a way to guarantee funding for everyone. You think the others would stay aboard, too?
Gillespie eyed him suspiciously.
Don't con me, Carda. You don't have that kind of money lying around.
No, but the New Republic does. And under the current situation, I don't think they'd be averse to having a few more fighting ships on the payroll.
Gillespie shook his head firmly. Sorry, but privateer is a little out of my line.
Even if your duty consists entirely of collecting information? Carda asked. I'm not talking about anything more than what you were just doing in Oris Sector.
Sounds like a dream assignment, Gillespie said sardonically. Except for the tiny little problem of finding someone in the New Republic stupid enough to pay privateer rates for snoop duty.
Carda smiled.
Actually, I wasn't planning to waste their valuable time telling them about it. Have you ever met my associate, Gent?
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.